Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton, bringing you this week's edition of Earth and Home. Today, we will be reading from Better Homes and Gardens, July-August 2025, and Mother Earth News, April-May 2025. Let's get started with Better Homes and Gardens. Take 5, We'll Travel for Food. Pack your bags and your appetite. From tart cherries to fiery chilies, these straight from the farm foods across the country are well worth building a trip around. Cherries in Door County, Wisconsin. If there were a periodic table for destinations based on their best-known foods, Door County, Wisconsin would be listed under CH for cherries. Dubbed Cherryland, USA, the county, which sits on the peninsula between Green Bay and Lake Michigan, is home to some 2,500 acres of orchards. During the short peak season for tart cherries, mid-July to early August, those trees, along with 300 miles of diverse shoreline, make the area a huge draw for vacationers. Spend time on the water or visit one of the many arts destinations. Check out Edgewood Orchard Galleries and the Hardy Gallery in particular. Then get your fill of as many cherry-inflected culinary delights as you can. In Fish Creek, treat yourself to the cherry-stuffed French toast at the White Gull Inn before strolling the shops along Main Street. Or head to Lautenbach's Orchard to pick your own fruit for pie making or a batch of Door County Bounce, cherries and sugar steeped in brandy. While you're there, sample one of several cherry wines and try your skill at the Cherry Pit Spit. Grab a patio table at Time in Sister Bay and dig into the local whitefish dip served with Door County cherry mustard, or order the fried cheese curds with a side of cherry barbecue sauce for dipping. Take in the views from the water on a Sister Bay scenic boat tour. Then make a pit stop at Wilson's, a quintessential soda fountain in Ephraim, to share an Eagle Harbor perfection sundae with hot fudge and Door County cherry sauce. Stay here. With large contemporary Scandi rooms, the Door in Sister Bay is a comfortably chic spot to tuck in. For a more casual vibe, Fish Creek offers two nicely renovated motel options, Cedar Court Inn and Fresh Coast Motel, within walking distance of shops and restaurants. Oma Blaze Ford. Apples in Washington. The riverside town of Wenatchee is very good at reminding you that it's the apple capital of the world. You can't toss a core here without hitting a mural, fruit stand, or bakery highlighting Washington's homegrown fruit. There's even a research lab at the edge of town developing new apple varieties. The Spring Washington State Apple Blossom Festival in Wenatchee gives you the biggest bite for your buck with 10 days of craft shows, cider tastings, pie eating contests, and parades. Stop by the Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center to learn how the fruit goes from seed to supermarket, and see a 100-year-old apple sorter in action. Most Wenatchee farms open for apple picking in late summer through early fall. For a pulled-back view of the lush orchards with Cascade Mountains in the distance, walk along the 22-mile Apple Capital Loop Trail, or snake north along the Columbia River on a scenic drive to Lake Chelan. At Chelan Valley Farms, pick heirloom varieties like Ludicrisp and Sweet Maya, then head to town to browse the aisles at Culinary Apple for apple-themed cookbooks, platters, and peelers. Stay here. With its 60s beach vibes and stunning lake views, Campbell's Resort is the kind of classic spot families return to every summer for generations. Nino Padova. Maple syrup in Vermont. About 1 in 4 trees lining Vermont's postcard-worthy backroads is rich with everyone's favorite pancake condiment. Though the trees are tapped in spring, maple syrup reigns year-round statewide. Stop by the New England Maple Museum to bone up on the history of maple sugaring, from its Native American roots to modern-day methods. Then pay a visit to Borden Maple Farm. Nestled in the hills of Woodstock, this family-run operation has been turning sap into syrup for decades. Tour their sugar house, learn about the product's health benefits, antioxidants, yay, and sample a range of syrups, from golden breakfast staples to molasses-like nectars that pair better with whiskey than waffles. The state's velvety spin on soft serve, called Maple Creamy, can be found at general stores and sugar houses throughout Vermont. One of the best versions is at Woodstock Scoops, which marries top-quality local dairy with Borden's organic maple syrup. Enjoy a swirl as you stroll the banks of the nearby Ottauquechee River looking for warblers. Stay here. Sterling Ridge Resort offers cozy cabins with views of the Green Mountains, plus syrup aplenty. Tour its state-of-the-art sugar works and bottling operation, or book a treatment at the resort spa. N.P. Chili's in New Mexico. There's no mistaking chili season in the Hatch Valley. Come late August, the air turns thick with the smoky sweet aroma of roasting green chilies, and 30,000 chili heads descend on the area for the Hatch Chili Festival. Held over Labor Day weekend, the event celebrates the fruit in all forms: condiment, main dish, artwork, and parade float. The green chili action continues at farms and restaurants throughout New Mexico. To join the fierce debate over who makes the state's best green chili cheeseburger, follow up a visit to Sparky's Burgers and Barbecue in Hatch with a trip over an hour north to the Owl Bar and Cafe in San Antonio, New Mexico, which is said to have invented the dish while serving Manhattan Project engineers at the nearby Trinity testing site. In Albuquerque, about 2.5 hours north of Hatch, the fourth-generation family-run Big Jim Farms is a beloved spot to pick and roast heritage variety peppers. Sign up for their Red Chili Ristra workshop to learn to craft the traditional arrangement often seen strung up on porches around town. And for a potent scent memory of your trip, grab a green chili aroma candle from Sara Perito Supply Company, available at various shops in Albuquerque or saraperito.com. And that's SERAPARITO.com. Stay here. Adobe walls, Kiva fireplaces, hacienda-style courtyards. You can't get more New Mexico than the Los Poblanos Historic Inn in Albuquerque. Tour its organic farm. Pick your own green chilies and make friends with the resident alpacas. N.P. Peaches in South Carolina. Georgia may call itself the Peach State, but South Carolina harvests 3 times more chin-dripping fruits per season, prompting it to boldly call itself the tastier Peach State. Embrace the one-upmanship at McLeod Farms in McBee, a fifth-generation orchard that grows peaches across 1,000 acres. Driving along I-85, you can't miss the Peachoid, a 135-foot-tall water tower meticulously painted to resemble a giant peach. Ring in harvest season at the South Carolina Peach Festival in July with live music, a beauty pageant, and a fiercely competitive dessert-making contest. Spartanburg County is said to have the juiciest peaches in the state. You could cruise its back roads for days in summer and never stop at the same roadside stand. Strawberry Hill, USA, sells the fruit by the bushel, sun-warmed and replenished from the field hourly. Load up on Monroe's and O'Henry's, then drop by the cafe for homemade peach ice cream. Stay here. In the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Red Horse Inn offers cottages equipped with kitchens, fireplaces, and patios with miles of uninterrupted views. It's a great home base for a summer peach-centric vacation, but also offers some of the best fall leaf peeping in the region. N.P. That concludes Take 5, We'll Travel for Food. Now let's move on to the next article. Plantings. Coreopsis. New colors and forms will have you taking a second look at this classic summer flower. Coreopsis exudes a carefree summer spirit, its wispy stems topped by daisy-like flowers. Some annual Coreopsis bloom a little earlier in the season than others, but no matter which variety you grow, you can count on them for long-lasting color. Go ahead and cut them by the fistful for bouquets. Snipping the plants encourages branching and even more blooms. Where to plant? Coreopsis does best in an area that receives full sun, 6 to 8 hours a day. It will grow in light shade but produces fewer flowers and will be susceptible to powdery mildew. Sowing seeds. In mid-spring or early summer, scatter seeds in the garden over prepared soil. Rake gently, tamp the soil down, and water well. Keep the area moist but not soggy until seedlings emerge. You can also start seeds indoors up to 6 weeks before the last frost, transplanting them in the spring. In warmer climates, sow seeds in the fall for spring germination. Caring for plants. Thin Coreopsis seedlings to 6 to 8 inches apart. Allow more space, up to 12 inches, for larger plants. As they grow, they will support each other. Once plants are established, they can handle periods of dry soil. Deer and rabbits do not favor Coreopsis. Pollinator magnets. Annual Coreopsis is an important source of nectar and pollen for a great variety of bees, butterflies, and moths. Plant Coreopsis in the vegetable garden to encourage pollinators and increase productivity. Perennial Coreopsis. In addition to annual Coreopsis, there are perennial varieties, hardy in zones 4 through 9. They tend to bloom in early to midsummer, spreading slowly to form clumps in the garden. Sources: selectseeds.com, edenbrothers.com, burpee.com. Odds are you're familiar with the bright yellow Coreopsis that's a native of Midwestern prairies, but have you met its white or burgundy cousins? Breeders have gotten creative with the flower in recent years, introducing delightful new cultivars. 1. Ruby Kiss, a white petticoat of petals, surrounds a dark red center, up to 46 inches tall. 2. Radiana Tigrina, red petals are edged in yellow, 12 to 18 inches tall. 3. Mardi Gras, pointed petals resemble stars, 18 inches tall. 4. Incredible, profuse bicolor flowers may be yellow, gold, white, or red, 2 to 3 feet tall. 5. Cinnamon, petals are red on the front, golden yellow on the back, 2 to 3 feet tall. 6. Plains variety, the native flower's yellow petals surround red centers, 4 to 8 feet tall. That concludes the article, Plantings, Coreopsis. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Earth and Home, and I am your volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Let's move on to Mother Earth news. Create a thriving local food scene. Support farmers and strengthen your community's food systems, by Robert Turner. Some third graders from a local elementary school came to my farm for a tour, and I saw it as an opportunity to test their knowledge. So, before they arrived, I tied some carrots to a small maple tree by the vegetable garden. When we walked past the tree, I said, "There it is, kids, the carrot tree." They didn't question it, and no one said a word. It made perfect sense to them. Why not a carrot tree? After all, apples grow on trees, too. Later in the tour, I pulled a carrot out of the ground, and a bunch of little noses scrunched up. Some of the kids were a bit concerned that food came out of the dirt like that, and I think they preferred carrots from a tree because it was cleaner. I apologized for tricking them and explained how carrots are actually grown. Many of us are a little disconnected from our food, but my point is this. I believe every kid should go on a farm tour at least once, because the future of food production begins and ends with the next generation. The average age of a farmer in the U.S. is 58.1 years old and rising. If we want to build up our local food systems, we'll need to spark interest in young people early on, so we'll have the bandwidth and brain power over the next few decades to grow the food. We'll also need to teach kids where exactly food in the stores comes from and why local food is important. We need to help them see and remind ourselves that stronger local and regional food production systems will limit the inherent risks and waste of transporting food from faraway places. Local growing systems will also help us face droughts and floods while improving food security, food sovereignty, and community health and resilience. Historically, supporting local farms and producing your own food were the only options. As we move ahead, it needs to be re-emphasized. As we throw back to a past when local farms were supported by necessity, we need at the same time to embrace the expertise that will allow us to keep up with food production in an uncertain future. The landscape of farming is changing. It's become more complex as we've learned more about soil health and the importance of microorganisms, carbon cycles, and the impacts of intensifying weather events. The farmer of the future must grow and raise food while becoming an amateur scientist, an agronomist, a botanist, a biologist, and even a climatologist to be successful and, more importantly, sustainable. There can be large farms on hundreds or thousands of acres growing a single crop, such as corn, and small farms growing a variety of vegetables on an acre or two for a farm stand or local farmer's market, or simply to share with family and friends. Regardless of scale, we need to assess our own communities for where we are, where we want to go, and what tools will help us get there. We need to have conversations with farmers, local government representatives, grocery stores, restaurants, food banks, hospitals, schools, neighbors, and more. Let's perform an honest inventory and assessment of our capacity to produce local food, and then figure out how to get where we want to be. Getting your bearings. The journey towards self-reliance in local food begins with asking yourself these important questions. What are the current production capabilities in your area? How many large and small farms exist in your region? You'll need several small and mid-sized farms growing a range of fruits and vegetables to supply the local food economy with enough variety to provide a healthy diet. If the supply side is sufficient, there must still be demand for local food products to sustain it, including value-added products. Performing an honest assessment is a good place to start evaluating resources and gaps. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, Census of Agriculture, www.nass.usda.gov/AG census, can give you important information about the current farming landscape in your county, such as the number of farms and acres in farming, the types and market value of products sold, farming-related income and expenses, the percentage of farms that use no-till practices or farm organically, the percentage of those that sell directly to consumers, and much more. Because the USDA website is complicated, it may be easiest to find a good summary of your county stats by performing an online search for your county and state alongside the phrase Census of Agriculture County Profile. A PDF summary of stats for your county should appear as one of the first search results. These data are updated every 5 years, and the summaries provide useful information in a tight, presentable package. An organization called Community Food Strategies, www.communityfoodstrategies.org, offers a nice web-based template for a community food snapshot that you can use to create an overview for your current local food environment, including information about community health, equity, access to broadband, farm economy, and ecosystem health. Both snapshots from Community Food Strategies and the USDA can be presented to stakeholders as you organize and build a local food movement so you can begin to change the food system from the ground up. The important thing is to understand your community's local food potential. Who are the producers of food products in your region, and what types of farming operations do they have? How much of the food that's eaten locally can be grown locally? Keep in mind the bigger picture of food and consumer trends, demographics, and markets. Within this larger context, you can identify the greatest barriers and opportunities for building a thriving local food economy and the steps that'll work for your community. A local food assessment is a powerful tool to achieve this. Bringing the community together. Neighborhoods and communities must work together to visualize and materialize the production, distribution, and access to food they want. Here are some examples. Together, we can come up with even better ideas uniquely suited to our own communities. Asking local restaurants and grocers to carry more local produce is perhaps the easiest part of a local food campaign. Speak with your wallet. According to the National Restaurant Association, local food is the number one trend in the restaurant industry today, and that certainly works in your favor. But the goal is also to attract and support local food processors and value-added producers, especially those that incorporate local grains or produce, such as bakeries or producers of salsa and hot sauce, because they contribute to circular economic development. Another important part of the local food economy. Keep at it. See if you can help get local food into schools or hospitals. Help local school groups take field trips to farms. Start a farmer's market if you don't already have one, or volunteer to help those that currently exist. This could be as simple as showing market managers and farmers how to take better pictures of vegetables for a website or social media. Organize and promote a weekend-long farm tour across the region and include a map so people can plan their route. You can even host an annual Business of Farming conference, where speakers and farmers get together to share best practices, such as marketing, record-keeping, or forming cooperatives. Microbreweries and local brewers are now a booming industry in many towns and regions across the country, and they can be an important spark for a broader, flourishing local food scene. Don't underestimate the power of local beer. Better yet, the spent grains can be composted or fed to local livestock, such as pigs and poultry, to keep them out of the landfill. What other projects that reduce food waste can your community engage in? Toward a sustainable future. A local food movement builds demand by continually reminding people why it's important to eat fresh, local food from local farmers. It also requires a plan for developing regional food production capacity through education, training, and workshops, and your plan could include various manuals and toolboxes. Value-added producers and food trucks need access to a shared commissary kitchen. Put it in the plan. Organize. Advocate and build community. Anyone who eats is a stakeholder, and an investment in local food is an investment in community health. A local food guide, in print and online, is a great place to start. Tell people where they can purchase food from local farms, restaurants, grocers, and farm stands. Provide a brief profile of all participating farms in the region and whether they offer regular farm tours or have a farm store. List the farmers markets in your area, the days and times of operation, and which farmers you can expect to find there. Highlight markets that accept Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, cards. Link farmers to markets and create connections within the local food system. Do you know someone who'd like to get started with a small-scale food production? A labor of love. Farmers markets don't just happen. In this video, learn about the behind-the-scenes labor that goes into maintaining a quality farmers market. Get involved and support your local food network by learning from the experience shared at www.motherearthnews.com/farmers-market-plan. That concludes Create a Thriving Local Food Scene. We have time for one more article. Ask our experts. Best plants for raised bed gardening. What are the best plants to grow in a raised bed? Vegetables that do well in raised beds include tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, summer squash, bush varieties of peas and beans, all types of greens, potatoes, onions, and garlic. In fact, in some locations, if you start early enough in spring, it's possible to get two vegetable crops from one raised bed. Crops that can be planted in early spring and harvested in early summer include onions, peas, greens, and other cold-tolerant crops. These early crops can be replaced with summer squash, yellow or zucchini, eggplant, cucumbers, or green beans, which will start fruiting in late summer. Tomatoes and peppers are generally planted in spring after the last frost, begin fruiting in midsummer, and will last until fall's first frost, so they'll be in the beds for the entire season. While herbs and flowering annuals will also thrive in raised beds, you must be cautious because they'll self-seed in the beds. The trick here is to deadhead or cut off dead flowers before they drop seeds. Some aromatic herbs to consider are basil, oregano, thyme, and rosemary. While dill is also a nice pick for its savory green leaves, you must be especially careful to deadhead as they're prolific seeders. You have many annual flowers to consider, but some of my favorites, for their lively colors and long duration, are marigolds and zinnias. Factors to consider with placement of your raised bed are full sun exposure and access to a watering hose, as well as putting the bed in a location where you can sit back, relax, and watch your plants after you've taken care of them. Full sun is important for the vegetables as they need the sun's energy to thrive. Having easy access to a watering hose will make it more enjoyable to water the plants, as opposed to the alternative of using a watering can. If you're thinking of putting in more than one raised bed, make sure they have at least 3 feet between them as a walkway. After planting, check up on how things are growing nearly every day. With care and attention, you'll have vegetables, herbs, or flowers to share with friends and family, and a raised bed to enjoy backyard gardening for many seasons to come. Andrew Morrison, Penn State Extension Master Gardener. If you missed any part of this program or are interested in another program, check out our on-demand menu on sunsounds.org. We are at the conclusion of this week's Earth and Home program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Thank you for tuning in this week. Join me next time for another new and informative program. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.